Steubenville. Saha. That Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or his incarnation, Kapila Deva. Vai. Indeed. Bhavan. Your good self. Loka Nirikshana Artam. Just to study the characteristics of the people of this world. Avyakta Lingaha. Without manifesting your real identity. Vicharati. Are traveling in this world. Api Svit. Weather. Yoga Ishvaranam. Of all the advanced yogis. Gatim. The characteristics or actual behavior. Annabuddhi. Who are illusioned and have become blind to spiritual knowledge. Katam. How? Vichakshita. You may know. Griha Anubandha. I who am bound by attachment to family life or worldly life. So translation. Is it not a fact that your good self is the direct representative of Kapila Deva, the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? To examine people and see who is actually a human being and who is not, you have presented yourself to be a deaf and dumb person. Are you not moving this way upon the surface of the world? I am very attached to family life and worldly activities, and I am blind to spiritual knowledge. Nonetheless, I am now present before you and am seeking enlightenment from you. How can I advance in spiritual life? So you can repeat. Is it not a fact that your good self is the direct representative of Kapila Deva? The incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
The incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
To examine people.
To examine people.
And see who is actually a human being.
And see who is actually a human being.
And who is not.
And who is not.
You have presented yourself. To be a deaf and dumb person.
To be a deaf and dumb person.
Are you not moving this way?
Upon the surface of the
world.
I am very attached to family life.
And worldly activities.
And I am blind to spiritual knowledge.
Nonetheless, I am now present before you.
And I'm seeking enlightenment from you.
How can I advance in spiritual life? Okay, so purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Although Maharaj Rahugana was playing the part of a king, he had been informed by Jadabharata that he was not a king, nor was Jadabharata deaf and dumb. Such designations were simply coverings of the spirit soul. Everyone must come to this knowledge, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter, text 13. Dehino smin yatha dehe. Everyone is encased within the body. Since the body is never identical with the soul, the bodily activities are simply illusory. In the association of such a sadhu as Jadabharata, Maharaj Rahugana came to the awareness that his activities as a royal authority were simply illusory phenomena. He therefore agreed to receive knowledge from Jadabharata, and that was the beginning of his perfection. So, tad viganartam sa gurum eva vigachet. A person like Maharaj Rahugana who is very inquisitive to know the value of life and the spiritual science, must approach a personality like Jatabharata. Tasmad gurum prapadyeta gyasu shreya uttamam. It's from the Bhagavatam, 11th canto, 3rd chapter, text 21. One must approach a guru like Jatabharata, a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to inquire about the goal of human life. So, Savaye bhavaloka irikshanaratam avyakta lingo vicharatyapi svit yogeshvaranam gatimandabhuti katham vichakshita grahanubandaha. So, Om Maganata Vidandasha Granjana Shlakaya Chakshura Meditam Yena Tasmai Shi Gurave Namaha. So it's interesting, many things are interesting, of course, but it's interesting to note that Maharaj Ruhugana was pretty much able to recognize Jatabharata very quickly after Jatabharata, you know, made some comments about spiritual life and how so it would, actually Sambandha stuff. Sambandha means, as we were talking about the other day. What do you want me to do? Swallow the microphone?
No,
just turn it up. Turn up the volume on the amplifier. Thank you. So it's interesting to note, Hare Krishna. It's interesting to note that Maharaj Ruhugana was able to recognize Jatabharata's position relatively quickly. I mean, extremely quickly, a lot more quickly. That's fine with me. I don't know about them downstairs. Gracias. So a lot more quickly than people on Sankirtan are able to recognize us. You know, it was so quick when the devotees were going out and distributing books that, you know, devotees would say, you're not the body, and the person would say, yeah, I surrender unto you. You're my guru. Please instruct me. You're wandering the earth. As described here, in presenting yourself. Of course, the devotees shouldn't present themselves to be deaf and dumb. Because that will not be so good for the... not donations. We're not thinking about money. But for the prestige of the Krishna consciousness movement, devotees should dress up nicely when they're on Sankirtan. They should act nicely, like perfect ladies and gentlemen. Because whatever they do, actually... it reflects on the Krishna consciousness movement. So people will see them as the Krishna consciousness movement. And just like you see sometimes if there's some fallen devotee who does some nonsense, then they'll publish in the newspaper, Hare Krishna devotee does nonsense. It is like recently in one place in North America, there was a devotee who was selling visas. You know, they were getting religious visas for people and selling them for $10,000 or $20,000. And so then they put it in the newspaper. Of course, now he's in jail for several years and he's going to get back deported back to India. But it reflects on our whole society. So devotees shouldn't be walking around like that. But for Jatabharata, there was a reason for that. And the reason was, first of all, he didn't want to fall into Maya again. You know, he had apt warnings from his past births that you got to be real careful. And also, he didn't want to be preaching the glories of the Lord to those who were envious, you know, committing that offense. So, in any case, devotees should dress very nicely, not like Jatabharata. And people are not recognizing us when we go out. I mean, it's not that I very rarely come across someone who I meet for the first time who offers obeisances and just says, please instruct me, I'm a soul surrendered unto you. It usually takes, well, a few years. And even after a few years, then people sometimes deviate from Krishna consciousness. Sometimes we get people who say, I'm a soul surrendered unto you, Gurudev, you're my eternal father, I'll do whatever you say. And then 5 years after that, they're taking herbal medicine again or something like that. So, obviously, Jatabharata, his interactions with Maharaj Ruhugana show that Maharaj Ruhugana was already on an exalted platform. a very exalted platform, and he might have even been a great, great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the question is, why was he in so much illusion that he was losing his temper and yelling at his poor palanquin carriers, particularly Jatabharata, before he recognized Jatabharata was a great devotee? Because Jatabharata was carrying the palanquin a little unevenly. In other words, Jatabharata was trying to avoid stepping on ants. And if you're carrying a palanquin, usually there's four people who carry a palanquin. In the old days, actually, even the women were carried by palanquins. Prabhupada said the women wouldn't be seen in public, so that there had to be a palanquin with curtains on the side, not just the ordinary palanquin, but curtains on the side. And the woman wouldn't be seen until, I guess if she went to Walmart or something, they'd have to carry the palanquin into Walmart. Now they have these motorized carts in Walmart for the women who can't walk properly. But in those days, it was, so the woman, it was just covered. Just like when Sita Devi was being brought back to Sri Ram, then she was in a covered palanquin, and all the monkeys, they were just like yelling and screaming, "We want to see her, we want to see her. You know, we fought so much. And finally, we want to see her." And Lord Ram said, "All right, she can come out of her palanquin. And actually, her own chastity will protect her, because she was the most chaste lady." So if one person is, one of the four people who are carrying the palanquin is just going all over the place, it's definitely going to be a little rough ride, because they don't have springs on palanquins. Maharaj Rahugana definitely got upset with Jatabharata, and he started screaming at him. So this indicates what? Mode of passion and ignorance. Passion in the sense that one is thinking himself to be very important. And actually, the reason we do get angry when things don't go our way is that we think we're the controller. We think we're the proprietor. We think we're the enjoyer. It's like this anger comes up very, very quickly without any, in many cases, without any notice. It comes up. And we get angry at all sorts of things, not only at other people, but even when our computer doesn't cooperate with us. Do you ever get angry at a computer, Jagga? Yeah, all the time. So it's just like, this stupid computer. Why? Because that's a passion. The anger is not passion. The anger is ignorance. But the concept that I am important, the controller, the enjoyer, that's like a passionate thing. That's like the king. So here we're talking about King Rahugana. King Rahugana, there's chatting. Tell the chatty Cathys or whatever they are in there that Fermez la bouche. Anybody knows French? That's French for shut your mouth. All right. Anyway. Oh my God. I guess we'll have to speak in Hebrew. So the king is definitely influenced by the mode of passion. Like we have these kshatriyas, the Brahmin, kshatriyas, vaishyas, shudras. Brahmins, they're in goodness. Kshatriyas, they're in passion. You know, passion means that basically that I'm the controller, I'm the boss, all those other things like that. And then vaishyas, they're in mixed ignorance and passion. And shudras, they're in ignorance. So there's a tendency, even if you are a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that you'll be influenced by the work you're doing. Let's take the case in the Chaitanya Charitamrita of Maharaj Prataparudra. You all know Maharaj Prataparudra. Great! He was actually a pure devotee. He's not just like some conditioned soul. So he was definitely a pure devotee. I mean, you can read in the Gaura Ganadesh Dipika, who he was in Krishna Leela. I mean, it's not just like some ordinary Joe Blow like, you know, myself or anyone else. So what happened is that he had an intense desire to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and get the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And what happened is he basically asked first Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and other devotees to speak to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to convince Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to give him his darshan. And so when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was approached in that way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu refused. He said he may be a great devotee of the Lord, but just by taking the name king, it is like a drop of poisoned in like a glass of nectar. In other words, he may be a pure devotee, but he's taken his position of dealing with the mode of passion, so it's sort of like spoiled his consciousness. And for a sannyasi to associate with such a politician or king, people would criticize. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was very much concerned with criticism, because as he described a sannyasi is like a white sheet, and a spot on a white sheet can be seen very, very easily. And also, he had this other devotee who was his associate, Damodar Pandit, who would criticize him practically for nothing. He would criticize Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Like, for example, one time, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was giving his mercy to a very young Brahmin boy. And this young Brahmin boy had a mother. Of course, everybody has mothers. But his mother was a widow, and she was a young girl, and it's described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, quite attractive. It's not that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw her or dealt with her, but he was dealing with this young boy. This young boy would come every day to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Lord Chaitanya would just give him his mercy. He would just preach to him about Krishna, and Lord Chaitanya was very affectionate to him. So this Damodar Pandit went to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and criticized Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for doing this. He said, well, his mother is a very young, beautiful girl. Everyone will talk. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, thank you very much. Hey, he was actually very humble about the whole thing. He didn't say, you rascal, why are you criticizing me? He said, thank you very much. He said, other than you, nobody will instruct me. So in this way, he was a little sarcastic, indicating that Damodar Pandit shouldn't have instructed him in that way. But still, Damodar Pandit was a great devotee. And then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to get Damodar Pandit out of the way, sent him to Navadvipa. He said, look, you're the only one who's capable of chastising and criticizing me, so why don't you go and visit Mother Sachi and make sure she's all right. So he sent him there. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very concerned about reputation, because he understood that his mission was to help the poor conditioned souls. In order to help the poor conditioned souls, you have to have a good reputation. So so Lord Chaitanya, he actually refused to see the king. And then they sent Lord Nityananda to talk to Lord Chaitanya about it. And Lord Nityananda went there to glorify the king and to tell Lord Chaitanya about the king's determination to see him, because the king said, if I can't see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I'm going to become a mendicant and wear an earring in my ear. Because that was the whole idea, that people thought renunciation meant to become basically like a gypsy at that point, you know, wear an earring in your ear and give up my kingdom. So he was very determined. So Lord Nityananda was thinking, I should talk to Lord Chaitanya about this. So he went before Lord Chaitanya, but he was so embarrassed by the whole thing, he couldn't say anything. And Lord Chaitanya said, you're just sitting there and not saying anything. You came here for a purpose, you know, say something. And then Lord Nityananda said, actually, we're a little afraid to say this, but the king is a great devotee. If he doesn't see you, he's going to become a mendicant and renounce his kingdom. And then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, basically he was so upset, he was ready to go away from Jagannath Puri. He said, if you speak like this anymore, Many devotees came to Lord Chaitanya. If you speak like this anymore, then I'm just going to go away. You're not going to see me here anymore. And after a while, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu agreed to give the king one of his garments. And then the king worshipped this garment. Still, he couldn't see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then after a while, Lord Chaitanya agreed to see the king's son, the prince. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very happy to see the prince because the prince had a swarthy complexion, which reminded him of Krishna's complexion. So he said, you know, anybody who sees this prince immediately thinks of Krishna. But still, he wouldn't see the king. But when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw the king engaged in the menial service of Lord Jagannath, that is, sweeping the path before Lord Jagannath, when Lord Jagannath comes out to the cart. Actually, this is something that devotees misunderstand. You go to many Rathyatras and you see they have someone dressed up as King Prataparudra sweeping the road in front of the cart. Actually, what Prataparudra did, he swept the road in front of Lord Jagannath, who was being brought to the cart. That's a misunderstanding devotees have. You know, sometimes you see in Rathyatra, there's someone actually dressed up in all sorts of kingly garb with a golden broom sweeping the road as the cart progresses. That's not what Prataparudra Maharaj did. He swept in front when Lord Jagannath is taken out of the temple and he's taken onto the cart, bouncing on different cotton pads called tulis and being carried by silken ropes. That's when he swept. Anyway, so when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw that King Prataparudra was taking this menial position, then he became very pleased. And in his mind, he accepted that he would meet with King Prataparudra. So later on, after the Rathyatra that proceeded to the Gundija temple, they were in the Narendra Sarovara. That means there was a garden there and a lake. And the king dressed up as a ordinary person. That's described as Vaishnava. In other words, he put on his dhoti. That's funny. I won't say why I'm saying that. But anyways, he put on his dhoti. And I don't know if we were, Kurta. And then he began to recite parts of the Bhagavatam to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I don't know who you are, but you've given me so much. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced him. And in that way, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave his association to the king. So the point I'm making is that kings, or those who take responsibility, or those who take some management, because king means management responsibility, kshatriya. Like management is a kshatriya business, and preaching is a brahminical business. So those who take up that particular position, they can become influenced very, very easily by the mode of passion. Because you're in charge of something, you're controlling something. Just like Srila Prabhupada interacted with Tamal Krishnamurti in a very interesting way. Because Tamal Krishnamurti definitely, he liked to control things. Lord Chaitanya Prabhupada said he thinks he's the supreme controller. So Prabhupada was interacting with Srila Tamal Krishnamurti, and he was saying to him, this is an interesting interaction you've all heard about before. He was saying to him that there's the Mahavishnu, and the Mahavishnu breathes out. And out of the body of Mahavishnu come so many different universes, actually innumerable universes. And amongst those innumerable universes, many of which are far bigger than the universe in which we're in, the proof of that is that those universes have Lord Brahma's with millions of heads, not just four heads. Just like you have a computer, and a computer can have four processors, right? And some of these supercomputers, they have how many processors? Millions of processors, isn't it? It's unbelievable. Because they can deal with more complicated subject matters. I mean, they can predict the weather like 10 years from now, which they're not able to do. But anyway, in other words, they're much more processing power. So if you want to have more processing power, at least what's called parallel processing. You know what parallel processing means? He knows. The rest of you don't. Your lives are wasted because you don't know what it is. Parallel processing means the processing can occur simultaneously. Serial processing means you process one thing, then you go on to process something else. It's like multitasking. In order for a computer to multitask, it needs many processors. Otherwise, it's time division. You understand? Time division. They have to stop one to do another processing. So in order to manage a big universe, you have to be able to process many things simultaneously, which means you need many processors, which in Lord Brahma terms means many heads. You understand? You know, 1,000 million heads, like 1,000 million Intel chips. It's the same thing. So there's many, many universes, and we're in actually one of the small ones. I've never heard of Lord Brahma having less than four heads. You know, I've never heard of a Lord Brahma having one head. So we're actually in like smallish one universe. So Prabhupada was explaining to Ramakrishna Maharaj in many universes, and we're in one of the small ones. And in this universe, there's innumerable planets, and we're just in like the Earth planet, because the Earth planet is kind of special, because that's where Krishna appears once in the day of Lord Brahma, not in any other planet within this universe. So, and on this Earth planet, there's many countries, and there's many countries, and we're in one of those countries. Not even the biggest country, like we're so proud in America. We're population-wise, we're not one of the biggest countries. You know, China's far bigger. India is bigger. There's smaller countries, of course, like Fiji. And Europe, it's interesting, in Europe there's all these little tiny countries where only 3,000 people speak a particular language. And so he was saying there's many, many countries. We're in one country, America. There's many, many cities in America. And we're in one of those cities, Los Angeles. And there's many, many streets. And we're in one of those streets. And there's many, many houses on this one street that we're on. And we're in one of the houses. And in that house, there's one Tamal Krishna who thinks he's the supreme controller. He's a great pure devotee. I'm not criticizing him. But the point is, when you really get into controlling, then you get, or managing, let's say, not just controlling, let's say managing, you can easily lose your perspective. I'm not saying he did, but I'm just saying that it's very easy, because you have King Prataparudra, who could lose his perspective being the king. You have Maharaj Rahugana. And therefore, they're influenced by the mode of passion. Therefore, they need brahminical guidance. There has to be a division of labor in a varnashram system. That's the point I'm coming to. There has to be a division of labor, which ultimately ISKCON will come to. One of the challenges I've seen in the management of our Krishna conscious movement is we haven't really understood that point so well. We have the same people carrying out brahminical kshatriya duties. And if it was hard for Maharaj Rahugana to balance all those things, certainly it's hard for us to balance all these duties. And so ultimately, there has to be a division like that. Now, what do we do now that there's no division? We have to be very careful of this mode of passion, thinking that I am the controller. Ishwaroham aham bhogi, as Krishna talks in the Bhagavad Gita about this, the demoniac nature, or the consciousness of the demon. The consciousness of the demon, or the consciousness of the mode of passion, is Ishwaroham, I'm the controller. Aham bhogi, I am the enjoyer. Siroham balavan sukhi, I am perfect. I am powerful, and I am happy. So we have to be very careful to guard against this consciousness as we're doing things that require the mode of passion. And even if you're a great pure devotee, then still there can be some influence of the mode of passion when you're dealing with the mode of passion. So that's the point I wanted to make here. So therefore, Maharaj Rahugana was taking shelter of Jatavarta, even though he was a great devotee to begin with. So any questions or comments about these points? Yeah.
I was really curious, because one of the things that hit me, too, was like how he became so deeply aware so quickly.
Yeah.
You know, and I was thinking because of his inquisitiveness. But I'm just curious about how that applies to us and what we can do.
Well, he was a great devotee already. That's why he became...
How can we...
We're not great devotees. It takes a long time for us to become aware and humble. A long time. You know, someone says to us, Maharaj, you shouldn't be angry. You're not the body. I know that already. Don't you think I know the Bhagavad Gita? I've been a sannyasi for God knows how many years. So Maharaj Rahugana gave up his anger very quickly. You know, he was angry, and he gave it up very quickly. That indicates he was a great devotee. So also, that's why it's the business of the sannyasis to travel and remind those who are entangled, like Prabhupada talks about here, entangled in designations. In this, Prabhupada said, the associated center sadhu is Jatavarta. Maharaj Rahugana came to the awareness that his activities of royal authority were simply illusory phenomena. So in other words, the sannyasi should be traveling and reminding people of that. Not simply going out and collecting money from donations from people. There's like one funny thing is that, I don't know if it's funny, it's sad. We were talking about how to get sannyasis to visit different places in the world where there's not so much money. So where there's money, you know, you find the sannyasis bunched up. This is like it was interesting. We had representatives from the UK where there's a lot of money, you know, a lot of rich Indian people. And they basically said, a very nice devotee, Gauri, I don't know if you know Gauri from the UK. A very nice devotee. He said, you know, we just can't keep up. There's too many sannyasis coming. So then right across the English Channel, you know what the English Channel is? That means in France, where we're having trouble, there's the Chateau. In the Chateau, which is the place where Prabhupada set up, and they're having trouble financially. They're being invaded by different other organizations that are trying to take our devotees away. They can't get a sannyasi to visit. So, therefore, what we need... Confirmed. So what we need is people who are disinterested in the things of this world. We need actual sannyasis who are disinterested, which I'd like to eventually become. So, who are disinterested, who can go places just to save the conditioned souls without any ulterior motive, without an ulterior spiritual motive. I'm not saying collecting money to build temples is bad or non-spiritual, but we need people like that who are completely detached, who can give spiritual instruction and not be influenced at all by other considerations. It's interesting, isn't it? We're still trying to get sannyasis to go to the chateau, to France. They call it the sannyas banquet circuit. I hope I don't get in trouble for that. All right. Jai Radha.